So we're gonna focus today on Eishes Chayil, and I think the next topic was gonna be Ashrei. That was gonna be the next topic, and there's actually a connection between Eishes Chayil and Ashrei, even though it was randomly picked between different people as to what to do next. And you should be able to figure it out by just looking at Eishes Chayil. What do you think the connection is between Eishes Chayil and Ashrei? Just look at the psukim, at the verses quickly. I could give you a hint, but it's gonna give it away. Aleph Bet. Excellent, excellent. Okay, so it goes in order of the Aleph Bez. Goes Aleph Bez Gimel Dalet, the Psukim, and then it ends at the very end. It goes from Aleph to Tav. And the same thing is true for Ashrei. In Ashrei, it skips one. It skips Nun. Nun is skipped there. We'll discuss it when we discuss Ashrei. Why Nun is skipped?
Because it's Nefila.
Nefila, yeah, it's about Nefila. But Nefila, Nun represents Nefila, which is falling. So we don't want to mention the concept of falling in Ashrei. It's supposed to be positive. But it's from Aleph to Tav. And what's the idea of going from Aleph to Tav? What is that idea that every verse goes from Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey? What is that idea that we find both by Ashrei and by Eishes Chayil?
That's
completion.
What God created with.
God created the world with the Hebrew letters. It's true. He created the world with Hebrew letters. But I think also one of the commentators, the Radak, he explains that Al through Tav is to tell you that everything is included within this. It's like A to Z or Z. Everything is included within this. That it covers everything. And so both with regards to Ashrei, when we get to it, it's about covering everything. Whatever the topic is, it's going to cover everything. And then so too over here, when it comes to Eishes Chayil, it's also covering everything. It goes from Aleph to Tav, from A to Z. It's covering everything.
Women cover everything.
Women cover everything. There you go. Yeah. Eishes Chayil, just for you to know, where is this found? This is found in Mishlei. In Proverbs, it's found at the very end of Proverbs. Proverbs is 31 chapters, 31 prakim, and this is the very end. These are the last 21 verses, 21 psukim in Mishlei. So this is the very end. In fact, it's literally, the verses are literally talking about a woman. It's the literal translation, but many of the commentators say that it's an allegory. One explanation is that it's an allegory for all of Mishlei. This is like the completion of Mishlei, so this is really an allegory to everything that we've been learning in Mishlei. So some say it's an allegory to what we've been learning, what we've been studying in Mishlei. And there's various midrashim as to what it's referring to. There are those that say that, some midrashim say that it's referring to Hashem, the Shekhinah, Hashem, and it's an allegory for Hashem. Others say that it's an allegory for the Torah. It's really about representing the Torah, and we will discuss how some of the verses, some of the psukim, what exactly is the meaning when it comes to the application for Torah. What does it mean for Torah?
I thought it was Shabbat.
It's not.
No.
Yeah. Not Shabbat. We'll get to it in a minute. Why we say it on Shabbos. Huh? The third one. There's another medrash which actually, I don't have it in front of me. And if you want, I could send it to you. But each verse, the Medrash then connects it to a woman in Jewish history, in Tanakh. That it represents a different woman in Tanakh, in the Bible, through Jewish history. So it's referring to different women. I think there's another Medrash which actually has it referring to Sarah the entire time. That it's referring to Sarah, of Avraham Sarah, it's referring to Sarah. And those are the different midrashim. But at the end of the day, this is an allegory about women, about a woman, Eishes Chayil. And so even if it's an allegory and it's representing something else, but it also is about a woman. The literal translation is about a woman. The reason why we say this on Shabbos, does anybody know why we say this? There's a custom for some to say this on Friday night.
Praising the wife.
Mm-hmm. So you think, yeah, so it would sound like it's praising the wife. That's what it would sound like. Yes, that is correct. And
or the Shabbos bride.
The Shabbos bride. It might be the Shabbos bride. The original sources, the original source is actually about the fact that the Shabbos represents the Shekhinah, represents Hashem. And one of the midrashim, some of the midrashim explain that this is referring to Hashem, that this is an
allegory.
Why do we say it Friday night? Yeah. We're discussing why we say it Friday night. So there's a suggestion that it's to your wife. You're supposed to say this to your wife. Or it's for the Shabbos, which is viewed as a bride, the Shabbos Kala, that it's a bride. But I saw in a book that there was research done as to how this custom developed, and it was really because the Shabbos represents the Shechina, represents Hashem's presence, that we have more of a presence of God on Shabbos. And some of the Midrashim explained that this is an allegory to Hashem, to the Shechina. And so we say this on Friday night because Shabbos is more of a Shechina presence, and more of a godly presence, and this is representing God. This is an allegory to the Shechina, to God. So those are the different reasons why we say this on Friday night. There's also, as you go through it, there's an interesting explanation which says that this is actually going through the different stages of life of a woman. That as we go through it, it goes from the time that, it starts from the time that she gets married, and then it goes through life as she goes through, as she gets older, and then through older age, and then ultimately to her death. That's how some want to explain this, that it's going through stages of her life. So it's important to look at as we go through this, how it goes through the stages of her life. The other point that I want to mention before we start is that it's also interesting to see how many times the husband comes up. How many times does the husband come up? This is about a wife. Eishes Chayil is about a wife. That's not true. It comes up more than one. It comes up. I'm not going to give you the answer one, but you can look at it.
It
says her husband once. Yeah, I can find it.
There's another. We'll go through it. So how many times does it mention her husband? And it impacts. It'll be interesting to see the role that the husband plays within this. What is the role that the husband plays within this? Within this chapter. This is actually not a whole chapter. This is just 21 verses from a chapter in Proverbs, in Mishlei.
Three times.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think it's three times.
Four.
Yeah, also, the last thing before we start is that I saw that in halacha, in Jewish law, in the Torah, a man is allowed to marry more than one wife. That by Jewish law, a man is allowed to marry more than one wife. The rabbis instituted that a man, you should only have one wife. You shouldn't have more than one wife.
And that's since Yaakov, right?
When they instituted that? No, that was a lot later.
A lot later.
After Yaakov, David had many wives. A lot of them had many wives. A lot of them had many wives. But this is the times of. This is a lot later on. This is a lot later on in history.
In the 10th century,
where they said that you should only have one wife.
Just for the Ashkenazim, wasn't it?
I think so. I believe it was just for the Ashkenazim. Yeah.
So interesting. They're almost going against Torah, or are they just interpreting?
No. It's not going against the Torah. It wasn't against the Torah. It was for a specific reason.
There was no rules around it.
No. The Torah says you can have as many wives as you want.
It does. Expressly says that. Okay.
It implies that, yes. It implies that.
Okay.
The rabbis of the generation, for various reasons, thought that it wasn't appropriate anymore. And so they said that you should just have one wife. It's not going against the Torah. It's just limiting what it is. Now, that being said, let me just finish the thought. That being said, there was research done, and there are various places found in Tanakh which imply that it's better just to have one wife. That even if the Torah allows you to have multiple wives, it's of great value to just have one wife. And one of the places that they discuss this is here. That over here, it's talking about Eishes Chayil. It's discussing one wife, the relationship of one wife to the husband. And the focus here is on the greatness of this woman and how, and it's only one. It's not a picture of multiple wives in this case. It's just one wife. So when the rabbis instituted this...
When was that?
Around the 10th century. Around the 10th century.
10th century, right.
So when they instituted this, it was it was, even if it's not based on the letter of the law, it was based on the spirit of the law. That there is a spirit of the law that you should only have one wife. Yeah, any questions on that?
Just asked me about this just a couple of days ago, how many wives that you could have. And I didn't realize, I had forgotten that it went on for quite a while.
Yeah.
After Yaakov.
Yeah, it went on for a while. A while. And I think you're right. I think amongst Spartan, it was even common beyond that. Yeah.
My son got married last year, and the Spartan ketubah actually has a line about marrying another wife.
In a Spartan ketubah?
Yeah, today. Oh, yeah.
What does it say?
Can't remember exactly.
It says that you could or you can't.
It says that you shouldn't, but it says
explicitly that you shouldn't.
Yeah, and that apparently is the difference between a Sephardic and a Ashkenazi.
Really, an ketubah? Yeah.
The Ashkenazi ketubah doesn't even say it because
it's already given. Yeah.
And the Sephardic ketubah says it. Actually says it. So
really?
It,
yeah.
I
didn't know that.
And it's something to do. It's something to do with being in the lands that you are. That even if you are in the lands where other wives are allowed to be taken, you're not allowed to take. That's what it
that's
is.
That's a Sephardic. In the Sephardic.
Yes, in the Sephardic.
My question is this.
Cool, huh?
Okay. Disturbing.
You can ask whatever you want. I'm just letting you know we're being recorded.
Oh,
you can ask whatever you want.
Right. Okay. I'm just wondering. I can't help but ask this. And the question is, it says that how many women a man can take. Does it talk about how many husbands a woman can take?
One.
Oh, it does specifically say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, a woman is only allowed to marry one husband, yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Where does that say that?
One at a time.
One at a time.
Yeah, but...
I can show you later, but it says it multiple times.
Rare find is a capable wife.
We'll get to it.
So it kind of infers at the opener that most women are totally incapable.
We're dealing here with the woman in the highest level. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the women of the highest level. This is the woman that has all of the great qualities.
But the opener is kind of.
Yeah.
I think it's just interesting.
Maybe it's a bad translation.
Shlomo, who he wrote.
Yeah.
Could be. He wrote Mishlei. Didn't he have like 1,000 wives?
He did.
He did, yeah.
Well, because he got it.
But he also.
He also favored one.
He also. It led to certain sins that happened within his.
This could be like a.
I don't know when this was written. Within, I'm not sure when he wrote this within his lifetime. So I don't know when he wrote this. Okay, so let's go through this. Eishes Chayal miyimtza v'rochok mipninim mechra. It's Eishes Chayal. Eishes Chayal is just let's start with that. That's a strange phrase. Eishes Chayal, a woman. They translate it as a capable wife. I'm not sure. That's not really a literal translation. Chayil is strength. It's a soldier. It's a woman who's at battle. It's a woman who's at battle, which is the battle of life. It's the struggles of going through life, and that she's the warrior who's able to withstand all of the struggles through life.
That's an awful translation, then.
Not really.
Capable from a soldier.
But it's
Capable. Strength.
Capable.
Okay.
Chabad translates it as excellence. Who can find a wife of excellence?
Okay.
Of what?
And that also it's not the exact translation, but
yeah. What is it? No, you're right.
How do they translate it? Excellence. Excellent.
Okay. Strength.
So mi yimtza, how could you find such an Eishes Chayil, such a perfect woman? We're dealing now with the perfect woman that has all of the great qualities. V'rochok mipninim mechra, and her worth is far beyond that of rubies, of v'rochok mipninim mechra, of treasures. So the one of the commentators, the Malbim, explains that. It's mi yimtza, it's hard to find, and it's also very expensive to buy. That's what these two phrases are. One is that it's very hard to find, and it's also very expensive to buy. which is it's opening with saying that this is the highest form, and we're not perfect, and you have to realize that we're not, that nobody's perfect. If they were to write one for men also, they would probably, for the highest the ideal for men also, men are also, they're not, they also have they don't, everyone struggles, and everyone nobody's perfect. Yud Aleph, Batach ba leiv bala v'shalal lo yachsar. So this is an 11 already from the second verse. We already have the husband's role here. So what does the husband do? The husband, Batach ba leiv bala. The husband puts his confidence in his wife. V'shalal lo yachsar. And he doesn't have anything to lose. So the opening, after it says Ish Yischayel, the opening is the role of the husband as the husband trusting his wife, that the wife is going to provide here. We're going to see as we go through this, is going to provide within the home, and the husband, in order to begin that relationship, the husband has to have trust in his wife. That's the beginning of the relationship. The Balaam happens to have a funny and interesting comment here. One of the big commentators, he says that Batach ba leiv bala. What we're going to be discussing here is how she spends her money. And that the husband, when it comes to most women, so a man won't trust most women because most women, the money they get, they spend. But for his wife, so then he'll...
I'm not even going to comment. That's so bad.
But for your wife, you trust. You trust that she'll spend it properly.
Can I ask why... The whole text uses the word Baal rather than
Isha. Baal is more of a language of husband. That's more of a language.
I know, but Hoshea, it says, you will not call me anymore Baal, but you call me Ishi.
I hear the question, but in general, Baal is also used. Baal is to represent the husband. So yeah. I'm not sure... It's a good question why over there it says it over there, but I'm not... Baal is common to be used.
It invokes Baal, you know, the...
Yeah.
He
wouldn't trust other women.
Other women you don't trust.
Your wife you do trust.
Right. Oh, I thought you said no.
No, two. Okay.
Yeah. It's a good thing that he trusts his wife. It's a good thing.
Your team.
Gemal Zutov Velo Ra Kol Yemei Chayeha. Gemal Zutov Velo Ra Kol Yemei Chayeha. She does good to him, never does bad, all the days of her life. She constantly does good for him. So some explain that this is a reaction to Batach Ba Leiv Bala. Once the husband's trusting her, so then she's going to respond in kind, and everything's going to be, she'll do good for him. I believe others explain that this is referring to her entire life, and that it's a statement saying that Gemal Zutov Velo Ra, she'll do good for him and not evil, regardless of what he does for her. Regardless of what he does for her, she will always do good for him. Now, let's keep in mind.
But that's what makes her an Ashes Chayil.
That's what makes her an Ashes Chayil, yeah. Thank you.
That's why she's so expensive.
that's why it's hard to find her. Okay, and then that's in terms of the relationship with the husband. That's a section about the relationship with the husband. And now we're going to go from verse 13 to 15. It's about her work at home. This is what she's doing at home. Darsha tzemer ufishtim v'tas b'chifetz kapeha. She looks for wool and flax. V'tas b'chifetz kapeha. And she has, as she does it, she has a desire to use her hands. She has that desire to use her hands, and the commentators explain that this desire is a central theme here about the fact that she wants to do it. She works, and she wants to do it. Whatever it is that she's doing, she has a desire to do it, to help out. But in this case, it's about working in the home, to help out in the home. She wants to do it. She's not doing it because she has to do it, but she has that chifetz. She has that desire to do it. Haisa ki ani asocher memercha tabi lachma. she is like a merchant fleet bringing her food from afar, that she's willing to go to extreme scenarios in order to provide for her family, to bring food for her family. What's interesting here is that, and we're going to also see it in the next couple of verses, is that who really has the obligation to provide for the family?
The husband, but we're studying all the time.
The husband, but he's studying all the time. That's more of a recent phenomenon. But it's true that the husband has the responsibility, and the ksuba, the husband has that responsibility to provide for his wife. And there is an aspect of the husband studying, and then the wife should provide. So the commentators here explain that this is talking about if the husband can't provide for whatever reason, whether it's because he's studying or whether he's away, he can't provide. So then the wife has to step in to that role. The point here is that the wife has to step into that role and then also provide for the family. 15. V'takam ba'od laila. In our generation, everyone has to work, I think, right? That's in order to make it. V'takam ba'od laila v'titen teref l'vesa v'chok l'naroseha. 15. Is that she rises in the middle of the night to provide for her family. V'titen teref l'vesa, she provides food for her family. V'chok l'naroseha. As I pointed out, some of the midrashim say that this is really an allegory to the Torah, to studying Torah. And so Rashi understands it as all an allegory to Torah. He says here, v'takam ba'od laila, is that the study of Torah takes place both by day and by night. And v'titein teref levesa v'chok l'naroseha, the fact that you have to give to your house and to your and to the young. And to the young naros, that's referring to your students. It's a reference to your students that you have to wake up and study in the middle of the night, and you have to provide, just like a mother provides for her family. So then, so too a teacher, a rabbi, has to then also provide and teach his students. Yes.
I would say that in just plain old. It also refers to the fact that there's a lot of selflessness that is required.
This is, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of selflessness here.
Probably every one of us at this table has had to get up before dawn to create and make and prepare so that the rest of the family has what they need once the sun rises.
Right. Yeah, so it's for sure. It's talking about the effort, the extreme effort that a person puts in by waking up so early to help others. It's all about helping others. And we'll see, this is also part of the theme here about helping others. It's going to discuss helping out the family and the home, and then it's also going to discuss chesed, about going beyond the home, and it's about helping out others and of those that are in need. 16. Zama sadeh v'tikachehu mipri chapea nata karem. That she works the field. This is all in order to get food for her family.
You said at the beginning that each verse represents a different Jewish woman in history.
Yeah.
Can you mention which woman it was as you walked?
So I don't have the medrash in front of me, but okay. I could send it to you.
I would appreciate that. Should I send you an email to remind you?
Sure, that's always helpful.
And that is interesting.
Chagra b'oz masneha v'ta'amitz zroseha. She girds herself with strength. And she performs with vigor. V'ta'amidz roseha, it's talking about how she works hard. She's working very hard. And now this is also, these verses are in the context, not just in the home, but this is in business, how she's working in business. Tama kito sochra lo yichba b'layla neira. Her business is thriving, and her lamp never goes out at night. She's constantly working. So first we had that she wakes up in the middle of the night to provide for her family. That was in the context of her family. And now it's in the context of her business. In order to, as she's working, she works very hard. We're discussing a woman here who's putting in a lot of her kochos, a lot of her strengths. She's working very, very hard. Yadeha, I think we're up to 19, right? Yadeha shilcha b'kishur v'chapea tamchu palech. And then in 20, some of the commentators put the two together. Kapa parsa li'ani bi'adeha shilcha le'evyon. If you look at 19 and 20, they discuss hands and they discuss the palm, the actual hand and then the palm of the hand. It says, yadeha shilcha b'kishur, that she's working with her hands, and then it says kapea tamchu palach. It's discussing her palm, and then in 20 it says that with the palm of her hand she gives it to the poor, and then with her actual hand she gives it to the evyon. To the first it says ani, and then to the evyon. The evyon is also a form of a poor person. So the Malbim explains what's the difference between an ani and an evyon. They both are referring to poor people, but what's the difference between those two words? An evyon is somebody who's very, very poor. They're extremely poor. An ani is a poor person, but it's not as poor as an evyon. And so he explains that in 19 and 20, it's saying that the money that she makes from work, she's going to then go ahead and use that for the poor person. With one time, when it comes to the ani, the poor person who's not extremely poor, it has the language of the palm of your hand. What's the difference between the palm of your hand and the hand itself? What's the difference between the palm?
It's a portion.
It's a portion, but it's also hidden. It's more the hidden part of the hand.
With the fingers you can extend.
With the fingers you can extend, and with the palm you it's
go further.
And
you can go that much further, right?
Right. So excellent. So so with the palm of the hand, that's when you give to the ani, to the poor person who's not extremely poor. They're just they are poor, but not extremely poor. And we say that for such a person, you're not supposed to give them charity in a public way. You should do it in a secret way, because they're embarrassed. They're still at the stage of being embarrassed by getting money from others. So that's with the palm. That's with the palm of your hand. With
so
the palm of your hand
allows them to take it from
you. Or it represents concealing it. It represents concealing it in a hidden fashion. It represents that. So you're giving it to them in a hidden fashion. The hand itself, that's when you give to the evyon. The evyon is somebody who's so poor that they can't live right now, so they're not embarrassed anymore. They're at a stage in life where they're not embarrassed to take. For them, you could then just give it with an open hand. You could give it to them with an extension of your hand. And so that's why there's a difference here between the hand and the palm, and the ani and the evyon. Those two different types of poor people. Chaf Aleph, after she's been working so much and she's able to then give to the poor, Lo sir lebesa mishala ki chobesa lo vishanim. She's not afraid of what's happening in her own home. Some people are afraid they can't give to the poor because they constantly have to be concerned about what's happening in their own home, which is a valid concern. But the verse here is telling us that she's willing to give, and she doesn't have that fear. She trusts in God. She doesn't have that fear that she won't be able to provide what's necessary within her own home. They'll be able to have heat. They'll survive the winter in her own home. And then Marvadim Asasala Sheish Bargaman Levusha. We're in 22 here. She makes nice clothing for herself. She'll be able to her family will be able to survive the storm or the snow. And they'll also have clothing. They'll be able to have clothing, and they'll be able to have very nice clothing. She'll be able to provide for her family to have nice clothing. So she could give to the poor, but at the same time, she'll have nice clothing for her family. 23. Noda b'sharim ba'ala b'shifto im ziknei aretz. So this is now the second time that we come on to in 23, where we come on to the husband. This is the second time where we reference the husband. And what's it in the context of? Noda b'sharim ba'ala b'shifto im ziknei aretz. Where's the husband in the translation? He's prominent in the gates as he sits amongst the elders. He's outside. He's in the gates. So the elders could either be referring to the Torah scholars that he's with the Torah scholars, or it's just he's out there in the public. And we have such a concept of Kvod Bas Melch Penina Pnima that the wife is more she's more at the home, and the husband is more in the public realm, and that's the concept of tznius, that she should be more private, that she should do things in a way that it's more concealed, that she should do her chesed and she should provide for others, and she should be the one that lives that life where she's not looking for the honor, and that's really of a higher role than the husband who's out there, because the husband that's out there, he's getting credit for it, and he's being haughty about it. Look what I could accomplish. The wife, she's able to do so much. The woman's able to do so much, but people don't find out about it. So she doesn't have to take that kavod, that honor, honor for it. So she's able to do a lot, and she does it in a hidden way, but the husband is out there. 24, Sadin Asas of a Timkor V'chogar Nasna Laknani. And then that connects with 25, Oz V'hadar Levusha V'tishak Liyom Acharon, that she, Oz V'hadar Levusha, she's clothed in strength and splendor, and she looks forward to, she's happy with regards to the Liyom Acharon, to the last day. So 24 and 25 are also connected. The Malbim explains that she, this is about the fact that she's working and that she gives her money laknani.
I don't understand that. This, she provides a girdle to the merchant. That I've never understood.
I think that's just providing to the merchant. It's about giving it. It's an example of what she would give to the merchant. That it's
so
just
that he can have a livelihood as well.
Yeah, it's to help them out. It's to help them out. Yeah.
Back to the ones where it talks about her whole household is dressed in crimson and her clothing is in linen and purple. Why? What's the reference to the colors?
I think it's colors of royalty. It's colors of royalty about how in her context, I think some explained that she was nervous about how she's gonna be able to provide for her family, that they should have heat and that they should function normally and that they should live a wonderful life. And so it responds back by saying that she'll be able to provide, and to such a degree where it's living like royalty. She'll be able to provide for her family. She could do the chesed, the kindness to others, but she'll also be able to provide for her own family. It's interesting that you point this out. Rashi, who says that this is an allegory for the Torah, uses this as a reference to the fact that for the Torah and for the Torah scholars, they have to dress in royalty. Because this is their dress in royalty, because they represent the Torah. The Torah scholars represent the Torah, and so they have to be proud of it. And so they have to dress in a certain way. They have to be, they have to dress in royalty.
As royalty.
As royalty. Thank you. Yeah.
Crimson is riches, and purple is royalty.
But they're allegories too.
Oh yes, but they've always been. Purple.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 25, it says that such a person who's giving to the poor and providing for her family, so she's clothed in strength, and v'tischak liyom acharon, and she's happy about liyom acharon. What is yom acharon? What's the last day?
Mashiach.
It's not Mashiach. What's the last day?
Death.
She's able. Such a person who lives a life of accomplishment and fulfillment, so she's not scared of death. She's able to accept death. She's done so much in her life that, and we believe in an afterlife, and she'll be able to have she'll feel accomplished, and we'll be able to go to that afterlife with a sense of pride. Pia Pascha b'chachma v'tores chesed al lishona. 26 here. Now it's discussing her character. So Pia Pascha b'chachma, her mouth opens with wisdom. So her mouth opens with wisdom. Already from Shlomo saying that her mouth opens with wisdom. V'toris chesed al lishona, and she also has chesed. So she has that chachma, she has that wisdom, and also she's a woman of chesed, of kindness. So Fia halichos besa. V'lechem atzel lo sochel. Now we're in 27. She looks over the house. V'lechem atzel lo sochel, and she doesn't eat the bread of laziness, which is also something which we saw earlier, that it's about putting in the effort, and it's not about not being lazy, and about putting in all that effort.
Why is it reference to bread?
I think that's the staple of life. That's the most basic food that you could provide for your family. Kamu banel v'yashrua ba'la v'yahalala. So now comes the husband again. So we had the husband in the very beginning. The husband is the one that trusts his wife. And then in the middle we had the husband's role of being out there. And then kamu banel v'yashrua ba'la v'yahalala. Now the children come and they praise her. And the husband also comes and praises her. Some explain that this is, as we mentioned in the very beginning, that this is all about the different stages of life of the woman as she goes through life. So first she's married, then she focuses on the home, and then she goes to work. And then this is towards the end of her life. This is, some say that this is, she's already passed away, and this is really they're eulogizing her. Her children and her husband are eulogizing her and talking about her. And this is now what they say. What do they say? Rabus banos asuchayel vat alis al kulana. It's a very powerful line here. Rabus banos asuchayel vat alis al kulana. There are many out there. You're the best. You're the best above all of them. There are many women out there, but you're above them. And why? This is their praise. Sheker hachein vehevel hayofi isha yiras Hashem hitis halal. We praise you not because of your beauty, but because of the person that you were, what you were able to accomplish. Yiras Hashem hitis halal. The fact that you feared God, that you listened to God, and you followed His commandments, and you were nice to others. So that's what we praise. That's what we praise about you.
That seems to be a reference to Sarah. Particularly.
Why specifically Sarah?
Because that's what she did, quietly in the tent.
I think it includes Sarah, but I'm sure it includes others also. Yeah.
Of course. It occurred to me.
Yeah. And then finally, the last line here is Tunula mipri adeha v'yahalua b'sha'arim ma'aseha. And they will praise her b'sha'arim ma'aseha, in the sha'arim. The sha'arim are what? Are the gates. Who was in the sha'arim earlier?
The husband.
The husband was in the sha'arim. So now the praise of the wife, which is the family sees what the mother, what the wife does, what the wife is able to accomplish. Others may not see it, but after she passes away, so then everyone's going to be praising her in the streets. Everyone's going to be praising her in the market. That everyone is going to praise her. Some explain that it's after she passes away, and others explain that it's not referring to a specific stage in life.
Maybe where the husband says everything that I have is because of my wife.
I'm sure that's part of the praise. But the praise here, the literal translation is that the praise is in the marketplace, that they're by the gates, that they're going to discuss the praise of the wife. It's going to be out there. People are going to find out about everything that she was able to do, and everything that she was able to accomplish.
In the gates of heaven.
Yeah, which gate?
This is the gates of the city. This is the gates of the city.
Okay.
That's the literal translation. Maybe there is a commentator that says that. They're just going back to the allegory to Torah. The children and the husband here would be, the children would be referring to the students, that the teacher teaches the students, and then the husband is referring to Hashem. Hashem also praises the teacher for teaching his students, and then the students and Hashem then go ahead and praise the Torah. They praise the Torah or the teachers of Torah. So this is the custom is to say this on Friday night. We pointed out that it originated because the different midrashim as to what this is referring to. Some say it's referring to the Shekhinah, to Hashem, and that there's a greater presence of Hashem on Shabbos. And also it's to the Shabbos, which is the bride. It's the Kala. And also it's said in the home for the husband to say to his wife. For a husband to say this to his wife.
Next week, could you discuss the midrash with this?
I could do it. I don't think it's going to take the whole time, but I could do it, and then we could go on to Ashrei.
Yeah.
You want to spend 3 weeks on Ashrei?
No, we'll do the next topic after that.
I don't know about the rest of you, but I would be really interested in finding out.